The U.S. and Iran to start the next phase of talks. The U.S. and Iran aren't coming. What happened to the negotiations? It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Vice President Vance has become the face of negotiations with Iran. He also criticized Israelis who criticized the deal. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Leila Fadel. Does Vance take the blame if negotiations fall apart? President Obama says the work he started is not over. His new center in Chicago is shaping how he will be remembered. Also, how Team USA lured an international soccer star. And New York throws a parade for the Knicks. It's Friday, June 19th. 10 years ago today, the Cleveland Cavaliers won their first NBA title. The news is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Vice President J.D. Vance has delayed a U.S.-led delegation to Switzerland for talks with Iran. Vance has emerged as the public face of the Trump administration's effort to reach a lasting deal with Tehran, as NPR's Danielle Kurtzleben reports.
President Trump made a telling joke about this at a press conference this week. A reporter asked him essentially if Vance is the fall guy if things don't work out, and Trump answered with this.
This way, if it works out, I'm going to take the credit. If it doesn't work out, I'm blaming J.D. You better be careful, J.D.
Now, it got laughs, and Vance said yesterday that, yeah, it was a joke. But even so, there's a reason it got a laugh. Trump does not like to lose, and Vance is the face of these negotiations. He's been doing these many press appearances this week, talking up his new book. And in those, he also talked a lot about Iran.
That's NPR's Danielle Kurtzleben reporting. Iran says it wants proof the U.S. is implementing an interim accord before moving forward. Fighting is escalating in southern Lebanon despite a ceasefire agreement signed by the U.S. and Iran this week. Lebanese authorities say at least 18 people were killed in attacks carried out by Israel today. NPR's Jana Rapp reports Israel says Hezbollah strikes killed four of its soldiers.
Lebanon's health ministry said intense airstrikes were hampering rescue efforts and the death toll was likely to rise. Lebanese state media said it was some of the heaviest bombing in weeks. Israel has said it will not abide by the agreement between the U.S. and Iran, and its forces have pushed further into southern Lebanon. The Israeli military published a map Thursday showing an expanded occupation zone. Iran-backed Hezbollah said it attacked advancing Israeli troops and destroyed three tanks. Israel did not provide details about the deaths of its four soldiers in southern Lebanon. Jane Araf, NPR News, Beirut.
Federal immigration officers often use facial recognition to identify people they detain. As NPR's Meg Anderson reports, a newly revealed document from the Department of Homeland Security details plans to give local police the same kind of technology.
The document describes a mobile app designed for local police deputized by ICE to enforce immigration law. With the app, police can scan people's faces and compare them to government records. Claire Garvey is with the policing project at New York University and has concerns about how local police, alongside federal authorities, are surveilling the public.
Can they walk around taking photos of whoever as sort of a dragnet way to attempt to identify individuals who might be in the country unlawfully?
In a statement, DHS told NPR that its technology tools respect people's privacy interests. Meg Anderson, NPR News.
This is NPR. The Senate Commerce Committee has advanced legislation that could stabilize college sports. The panel voted on Thursday to send the bill to the Senate floor. The measure would regulate athlete compensation, set rules for transfers, and establish eligibility standards. It has bipartisan support, though the SEC and Big Ten have not endorsed it. State investigators in Texas say a day camp was not prepared for last year's deadly flooding. 25 campers and two counselors were killed in the floods at Camp Mystic over the 4th of July holiday. Blaise Ganey from the Texas Newsroom reports.
A 115-page investigative report found Camp Mystic had no written emergency plans, struggled with evacuations, and faced communication breakdowns as floodwaters rose. Investigator Casey Garrett told lawmakers staff members were left searching for direction during the crisis.
The senior counselor in Cozy Corner said they were on the walkie-talkie. What do we do?
What do we do? And it went unanswered.
Lawmakers have adopted the report and say its findings could shape future legislation, though some argue Texas has already addressed many of the problems through youth camp safety laws passed last year. For NPR News, I'm Blaise Ganey in Austin.
An ancient oak tree said to have sheltered England's legendary folk hero Robin Hood has died. The 1,200-year-old major oak in Sherwood Forest failed to produce leaves this spring. Officials say it hasn't been determined what killed the tree. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Paramount Plus with The Agency, a political espionage thriller starring Michael Fassbender, Jeffrey Wright, Jodie Turner-Smith, and Richard Gere. All episodes of The Agency streaming June 21st on Paramount Plus. This is NPR.
As KAXE celebrates 50 years, we are looking back at the music from the year of our founding. This week's pick of 76 is Blondie's self-titled debut album. Blondie started as a club band, performing regularly at CBGB's and Max's Kansas City, both iconic clubs in New York City. They took this energy to their album with pounding drums, flashing keyboards, and guitars. Ken Tucker of Rolling Stone magazine described lead singer Debbie Harry as the possessor of a bombshell zombie's voice. While the album didn't make a splash on the new wave scene at first, songs like Ex-Offender, In the Sun, and Man Overboard set the stage for what's to come from Blondie. New York Isle is covered by
concrete
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Faldig.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Vice President Vance is delaying his trip to Switzerland to negotiate the terms of a peace agreement with Iran.
Vance and a delegation from Iran were scheduled to meet in Lucerne. The presidents of the U.S. and Iran signed a memorandum this week. It sends benefits to Iran, but is only a first step toward a comprehensive deal. In a few moments, we'll discuss these developments with veteran American diplomat Richard Haass. We begin with the latest from Switzerland.
NPR's Rob Schmitz made it to Lucerne, even though the vice president did not yet. Rob, hi there.
Hey there, Steve.
It seemed like negotiators were on this accelerated schedule. They signed the preliminary deal early. They were going to dive right in and talk. Why are they now delaying?
Yeah, we don't know exactly why, but Israel's continued bombardment of southern Lebanon is not helping. You know, the very first article of this agreement that was signed by President Trump and Iran's president promises to ensure the territorial integrity of Lebanon. Obviously, that is not happening. Just this morning, Lebanon's health ministry said at least 18 people had been killed in overnight strikes, while the Israeli military said four of its soldiers have been killed in southern Lebanon. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has made it clear that Israeli forces in southern Lebanon intend to stay there. Members of Netanyahu's cabinet have called this deal, quote, bad for Israel. And Vance said this in response yesterday.
Donald J. Trump is the only head of state in the entire world who is sympathetic to the nation of Israel at this moment in time. And he happens to be the head of state of the world superpower. If I was in the cabinet of the Israeli government, I might not be attacking the only powerful ally that I have anywhere left in the entire world.
Really rare for an American official to publicly dress down Israel like that, which says things we could maybe discuss about politics in America, but also about the pressure on Vance.
Yeah, and he's obviously in a very difficult position here. And yesterday he appeared defensive when he was pressed about the details of the agreement with Iran. Vance said, quote, we don't trust words.
We trust action and we trust conduct. And so we're going to reward conduct and we're not going to reward any words, whether they're written on a sheet of paper or not. There's a lot of discussion, the MOU, the gentleman's agreements, the final deal. Words don't matter, ladies and gentlemen. We're about verification.
And Steve, you know, some might question here that if the Trump administration doesn't trust words, why sign an agreement in the first place? When President Trump was asked at the G7 summit in France what he would do should Iran not adhere to the agreement, here's what he said.
We're going to bomb the hell out of them if they violate the agreement.
How did Iran respond to that, Rob?
So Iran's Speaker of Parliament shot back at Trump this morning in a post on X saying that if there is a breach of the agreement, Iran will, quote, have no hesitation in delivering a crushing response to the enemy. And it should be noted here that the very first article of the agreement promises that both sides will cease all military operations.
They're supposed to cease military operations. They are. But I guess here on day one or two or three or whatever this is, they're not going to be talking.
Yeah, that's right. And here we are in Switzerland waiting for a peace deal. You know, across this beautiful alpine lake for me here in Lucerne, the Swiss government has taken a range of security measures to host this event. And there are hundreds of journalists here to record it. But for now, Iran's foreign ministry said the signing ceremony was off. And the White House said in a statement that the plans for the upcoming technical talks have not been finalized. Neither side is here. They're threatening to strike each other. And this agreement appears to be on very shaky ground.
NPR's Rob Schmitz is in lovely Lucerne, Switzerland. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thank you.
Whenever negotiations between the U.S. and Iran do resume, the man leading Tehran's negotiating team will be a regime hardliner. NPR's international affairs correspondent Jackie Northam reports that he's already undermining a key aspect of the Memorandum of Understanding.
Iran's choice of chief negotiator, Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf, sends a clear signal that any deal brokered with the U.S. will be both protracted and hard-fought. The 65-year-old Ghalibaf is Speaker of Iran's Parliament. Afshan Ostavar is an Iran specialist and author of Wars of Ambition, The United States, Iran, and the Struggle for the Middle East. He says Ghalibaf is ambitious and has close ties to the regime.
He got his start in the Revolutionary Guards, and he became a very prominent IRGC commander, ultimately leading the IRGC's Air Force. He also became the commander of Iran's National Police. And after that, he ran for president several times.
Ostavar says Ghalibaf was involved in a brutal crackdown on protesters in 1999 and was also seen as thoroughly corrupt and involved in real estate scandals during his time as mayor of Tehran, which he survived because of his insider status. Ostavar says with so many Iranian leaders killed during the war, it's difficult to know where Ghalibaf is in the current pecking order.
What we do know is that he is one of a group of people that seem to have become empowered through the war to lead Iran's policy and decision making. And he's been empowered by that insider group to lead the discussions with the United States that ultimately led to the current MOU.
Iran appears to have benefited more from the preliminary deal than the U.S. Talks about its nuclear program are pushed back. The MOU doesn't address its arsenal of ballistic missiles. And Iran could receive hundreds of billions of dollars in sanctions relief and reconstruction funds. Iran did agree to open the Strait of Hormuz, allowing ships to pass without fees for 60 days, a key demand by the U.S. But Ghalibaf, speaking on Iranian TV, cast doubt that would be permanent. Ghalibaf says Iran will require payment for services in the Strait of Hormuz because it has both responsibility and sovereignty over the region. The opening bid in negotiations likely to last a long time. Jackie Northam, NPR News.
There are plenty of skeptics of the preliminary agreement between the U.S. and Iran. Among them is veteran diplomat Richard Haass, who served in both Republican and Democratic presidential administrations. He's also president emeritus of the Council on Foreign Relations. Good morning and welcome back to the program, Richard.
Thanks, Layla. Good to be with you.
So you have written that this deal is a, quote, massive victory for Iran. Walk me through what Iran's government is gaining here, how this is a victory.
Well, it's a victory in part because it falls far short of our articulated goals. We haven't had regime change in any normal sense of the word. Instead, we have a harder line government. This regime is not being asked to give up principal parts of its military forces, its missiles, its drones. It's not being asked to give up its support for groups like Hamas or Hezbollah. All the nuclear questions have been kicked down the road. It's going to be able to put tolls on use of the Strait of Hormuz in 2 months. So that's, you know, not bad. Plus, a lot of the financial benefits accrue to Iran now. The ability to sell oil that it won't have to discount because sanctions have been lifted. Assets that have been frozen for decades are going to be released. So essentially, Iran's going to get quite a few economic benefits up front, which, by the way, will strengthen this regime. It's very bad for the Iranian people. It will allow them to rearm. It will allow them to, again, give support to these proxy groups. Plus, down the road, there's talk of a much bigger pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, a $300 billion reconstruction fund. So, you know, from the Iranian regime's point of view, this is an extraordinarily good deal.
Yeah, that's a sanction relief, $300 billion of money that's been frozen. You said this isn't good for the Iranian people. How are they going to be impacted?
Well, again, you know, tens of thousands were killed early on in this crisis over the last, 4 months. This regime now is, quote unquote, harder line. It's as illiberal as you get. They are now going to get economic help. And what's so significant about that, Layla, is the economic mismanagement by this government over the last couple of decades has been their Achilles heel. The currency was in free fall. Terrible conditions for the Iranian people. And that was what was fueling these protests in the streets. So this money they're going to be getting in some ways relieves a lot of the pressure on the regime, but the money is unconditional. We're not saying, for example, you've got to let up on your repression. You've got to treat women better. You've got to let people out of jail. So for the Iranian opposition,
so very few demands on the government for this money.
Absolutely, it's unconditional. None, essentially. Indeed, what's so interesting about the agreement, it says the United States will not in any way interfere in Iran's internal affairs. That's quite a move back from a call for regime change.
And the tens of thousands of people being killed, are you referring to both the thousands of people the Iranian government killed in protests and the thousands of people who've been killed in this war?
I was mainly speaking about the former, at the hands of the regime. So for the opposition, this is a really bad outcome. For those who want to see a more democratic Iran, this is a bad outcome.
We heard Vice President J.D. Vance really go out and defend this deal in several media appearances, in a briefing. He said to the New York Times, if you think this is a bad deal, what is your alternative? So I'll put that question to you. What is your alternative?
Well, it is a bad deal. There aren't great alternatives. And that's, again, a powerful argument. We never should have started this war. This all could have been anticipated. The idea that Iran would close the Strait of Hormuz and get leverage for that, that it would be able to shoot off its drones and its missiles against neighboring countries. So at this point, the United States essentially decided to cut its losses. I think that's the only good thing you can say about this deal. But the real issue is not the deal so much as that you could have gotten a better one. It's the argument for not having gone to war in the first place.
Would you, I mean, if Iran came out as the big winner here, I mean, in several goals of the U.S. just set aside, like containing ballistic missiles, I take it you would cast the U.S. as the losers here?
Among the losers would be the United States, our reputation for competence. I think the Gulf countries, the Arab countries, now have to live with an emboldened, capable Iran. The Iranian people we already talk about as a loser. I think Israel may be among the biggest losers. Its relationship with the United States has been badly damaged, and its freedom of action has been significantly curtailed.
Richard Haass, President Emeritus of the Council on Foreign Relations, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
This is NPR News.
It's 6:19. Thanks for listening to the Friday Morning Show on People Powered KAXE. I'm Jennifer Barr. Support comes from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home, school, and in the community. More information at northhomes.org. Good chance for rain today. Possible thunderstorms this afternoon. High 66 to 70. Our lows tonight in the mid to upper 40s with rain tapering off this evening. And sunny tomorrow. High 68 to 73. And Sunday, again sunny with highs in the upper 60s to low 70s. We'd like to thank Beltrami Electric for their support, a Touchstone Energy cooperative with a mission to provide safe, affordable, reliable electric service. Beltrami Electric Cooperative, connecting communities and powering life in northern Minnesota for more than 85 years. Donating stocks and mutual funds is one way to support KAXE's future. You could receive tax benefits as well. Call Sarah for more details, 218-326-1234. Brainerd Animal Hospital presents Pups in the Park a week from tomorrow on June 27th from 10 to 2 at Lum Park in Brainerd. See dog demos throughout the event, plus there's a pie-eating contest for both kids and dogs, a silent auction, crafts, food, and much more to raise funds for the Babinski Foundation Animal Shelter. We continue with Morning Edition on KAXE.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Fisher Investments. As a fiduciary, Fisher Investments is obligated to act in their clients' interest. Learn more at fisherinvestments.com. Investing in securities involves the risk of loss. From Clarivate, celebrating the U.S. at 250 with educational and research resources about the people and ideas behind the nation's origins. Learn more at proquest.com. From the Andrew Carnegie Foundation, formerly Carnegie Corporation of New York, working to reduce political polarization through support for education, democracy, and peace. More information at carnegie.org. And from listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadel.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Today in the World Cup, the U.S. men's national soccer team will face Australia. It comes on the heels of one of the best games the U.S. men have ever played at this tournament, thanks to one player who had to be recruited from another country. NPR's Becky Sullivan has his story.
Falaron Balogun is the starting striker for the U.S. men's team, but to hear his voice, the U.S., might not have been your first guess as to where he's from.
No, I've seen New York. New York's probably the place I'm familiar with the most out here, so yeah.
Balogun's parents are Nigerian, and of course he has that English accent. But his winding path to this World Cup team began 25 years ago when his mother was in Brooklyn to visit family, and she was pregnant, as Balogun recounted on the Men in Blazers podcast a few years ago.
As she was planning to leave, she went to the airport, and actually when she was at the airport about to board her plane, they noticed she was too close to her due date, so they told her that she couldn't fly.
With no other options, Balogun said, his mom turned right around and headed back to her sister-in-law's to stay there until her son was born. Soon after, the Balogun family moved to London, where Falaron grew up. A scout with a Premier League team, Arsenal, spotted him at a youth tournament. And by the time he was in his teens, he was playing with the Arsenal and England's youth squads, scoring goals with confidence and power.
Ball, Balogun hooks it into the net, and Arsenal are in front. And no surprise, it's Flo Balogun once again.
But England's national team is stacked, and its biggest star was already a striker. Meanwhile, the U.S. was badly in need of one. The roster then was filled with talented wingers and midfielders who could build attacks up the field, but they lacked somebody who could reliably get the ball into the net and take some pressure off of star Christian Pulisic. At the 2022 World Cup, the Americans scored just 3 goals in 4 games. Afterward, as U.S. soccer officials began to plan for the future, the lack of strikers coming up among players already in the American system meant they had to look elsewhere. Here's interim coach Anthony Hudson speaking in early 2023.
If there are any dual nationals out there that can help the team, we need to connect and engage and try and encourage them and see, show them what we're doing and hopefully get guys to come and commit to us.
In March of that year, Balogun, who still officially represented England, found himself in Orlando at the same time as the U.S. men's national team was meeting there for a camp. So Hudson met with Balogun and made the pitch. A few players had dinner with him, too. It was all supposed to be a secret, but social media detectives deduced where he was from a picture he posted on Instagram, and soon fans started flooding his social media with American flag emojis and comments urging him to join the team. It showed him, Balogun told reporters last month, that Americans cared more about soccer than he had ever known.
That was motivating because it just shows, you know, how people say, you know, soccer's not a big thing over here, but I do think it is. You know, there definitely is a big fan base, and, you know, I really felt that.
A couple months later, Balogun made it official by joining the U.S., and soon enough, he was making his presence known, as heard here on CBS Sports.
Driving into space with Balogun on his right! On a night of firsts, Fuller and Balogun has his first international goal for the U.S.
Now the 24-year-old is having a banner year. For his club team, Monaco, he scored 13 goals this past season. And for the U.S., he has scored 3 times in 5 games this year, including twice in last Friday's World Cup opener against Paraguay. That made him the first American man to score multiple goals in a World Cup game since 1930. Teammate Weston McKinney says Balogun has more than delivered on all of that recruitment promise.
Having him with us and you know, his abilities that he has, and to bring competition into the striker position and be able to give everyone a run for their money. And yeah, I guess you say in the return, it was not an expensive dinner. It was a cheaper dinner than for what we got.
Balogun called his performance against Paraguay a dream. He'll have the chance for another today against Australia. That kicks off at 3 p.m. Eastern time or noon Pacific. Becky Sullivan, NPR News, Seattle.
The celebrations are not over for the New York Knicks' first championship since 1973. On Thursday, New York City threw a victory parade through Manhattan. Reporter Steve Kastenbaum was there.
The Canyon of Heroes in Lower Manhattan has hosted more than 200 ticker tape parades through the years, but very few have united New Yorkers the way they came together beneath those skyscrapers for the Knicks. So many fans came out to celebrate, police had to turn people away more than 2 hours before the parade started. Sean Baranoff brought his family.
It's overwhelming, honestly. I never thought I'd witness this in my lifetime. It's incredible. It's like I said, it's overwhelming. And to experience it here with my kids and my wife is just, it's a dream come true, honestly.
Shane Gritton is such a big Knicks fan that she took a job at Madison Square Garden 15 years ago in order to be close to the team. When they finally won the championship, beating San Antonio in 5 games, she said,
I cried. Want me to be totally honest, I cried because I'm so proud of these guys, man. We've been through a lot throughout these past years, and like I've said, I've been in that building since 2011. Me actually now seeing them make it past the semifinals, make it, you know, go throughout the playoffs and make it into the finals, come on now. And we actually did it. We did it.
The team concluded the celebration on the steps of City Hall, where Mayor Zoran Mamdani gave the players keys to the city. He counts himself among the long-suffering Knicks fans.
We waited without ever knowing if this day would come, and we waited because we knew deep down in our sick, suffering hearts that it would. New York City, this team has done it. The New York Knicks are NBA champions.
Team captain and MVP Jalen Brunson said they got it done for the city.
We really did it, dog. Somehow, some way, I knew we were going to find a way to get this done. Most importantly, thank you to the fans.
53 years in the making, New York was finally able to take a victory lap. James Dolan, the team's owner, said they accepted an invitation to visit the White House. For NPR News, I'm Steve Kastenbaum at City Hall in New York. Sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high five. I'll be spiked out, I could trip a referee. Tell by my attitude that I most definitely leave from.
This is NPR News.
If you face workplace discrimination, you can blow the whistle to an independent agency. But if you work for the federal courts, you don't have the same rights.
They have nowhere to turn, no independent enforcer, no neutral decision maker.
I'm Elsa Chang. Law students are asking the Supreme Court to weigh in on how the courts police themselves. That story on All Things Considered from NPR News.
You can hear that story this afternoon beginning at 4 o'clock. It's here on People Powered KAXE. It is 6:29. I'm Heidi Holton with Malachi Coons on this June 19th. It's Juneteenth.
Yeah, happy Juneteenth, Heidi, and happy Juneteenth to you listening. Thanks for hanging out with us on the Friday morning show. I know there are some events around the region today that we'll be sharing info on coming up still a little ways out on Headwaters at 9 o'clock. I'll have some Juneteenth music, and I think we'll do a little bit of that throughout the Friday morning show as well. But how's your morning going so far, Heidi?
It's all right. It's there was a beautiful, did you see sort of the pink of the sky this morning? It was sort of striping.
I think I got up just a little bit, maybe too late for that.
Okay.
Yep. I was, you know, a little behind you here. I was enjoying the, you know, it was very like low fog, the kind of fog that you just drove in and out of.
Yeah.
Not enough to like make you feel nervous, but I enjoy that a lot. So that was my nature joy this morning.
Well, I don't know how your week went, but it was both slow and fast for me. So I'm like, yay, it's Friday. But like, how is it already Friday?
I know.
I don't understand how the days go by sometimes.
June is going by.
Yeah.
Are you celebrating Juneteenth? Are there events by you? You can let us know today, 218-326-1234. We'd love to hear from you if you have plans to celebrate or things that are going on, as maybe you have the day off, maybe not. I don't know if it's for everyone, but I know some people around the region have been to let me know that they do have the day off. So
And it's, you know, banks are closed. It's a federal holiday. So this is what we're looking at, though, for the day today. Good chance for showers and possible thunderstorms. Highs 65 to 70 with southwest winds 5 to 15. Chance of continued rain through the evening with partly cloudy skies, temperatures in the mid to upper 40s, northwest winds 5 to 15. And mostly cloudy tomorrow, Saturday, becoming sunny, 69 to 73, evening lows in the mid 40s, and 72 to 74 and sun on Sunday. So
yeah, nice. It was nice and cool overnight. I was chilly when I woke up this morning. We do not have I'm seeing right now, still in the low 40s toward the Iron Range. Aiken, it's 50, Grand Rapids, upper 40s. And Bemidji, cloudy and low 50s. Without having the heat on or anything going, I woke up this morning and I thought,
gotta
have a sweater or something ready for when I wake up, because I was freezing around the house trying to get ready. So
yeah, I was a little bundled up. We had, not last night, but the night before, a little fire in the wood stove because it was pretty cold, which feels so weird, but
I know. So now I have a wood stove, and I had that exact thought yesterday. Like, at what point do you do a little one in the summer?
Yeah.
And I didn't, but you've done it. So that lets me know that.
Yeah. It's okay.
Just overnight?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Later in the evening. And it was a little too, cause it, you know, the thing with the wood stove, you can't control it all that much. So
yes.
It's a little too warm, but we could open up a door too.
That's okay.
We needed a little bit of the heat. I would rather just bundle up, to be honest with you, Malachi. Hopefully he's not listening. He's not. Then have a fire. That just seems wrong to me, but it does feel good. So
yes, I agree. I'm the same way, I would assume. We have all these, I have all these clothes taking up all this space. I might as well just, So
you now have a wood stove. That means you are in the world of must procure wood, right?
Been procuring it.
Yeah. Have you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
We've, what have we stacked, maybe 3 cords so far.
Okay.
They come in a cord at a time.
Okay.
Like one trailer full.
Nice.
That's been taking up a little bit of my time.
Yeah.
It's kind of like one solid, maybe not a full day, but
yeah.
Especially it was those hot days. They started arriving when it was a little warmer.
Oh boy.
And, it's a nice workout.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's the whole, you'll get into the, you know, it gets you warm by taking care of it, to have the wood there, you know, and then to bring it in, and then the wood, finally you get to use it to also heat. It's this whole cycle.
It's got to be a lot of benefits. I'm thinking it keeps you fit. I always think it's good for the mental health in the winter, and it is a workout. So that is
dang it.
It does feel a little bit like, you know, I'm prepping for when it's negative whatever, when it's 85 and sunny. Like,
it goes so fast.
A little backwards, but
you have to do that. It's good to think ahead, because it's unbelievable. He was listening. I sort of got in trouble for the bundle up.
For outing. Dang. You know?
It's all right.
It's all right. Yeah. People can successfully live together with different
we can, yes.
with different levels of heat in the home.
We have proven it.
I would think that myself and Lauren are the are the same.
Okay.
Hey, there we go. Brown thrasher. Right out the window.
Nice.
First bird of the day.
Coming up, we're going to have national native news. We're learning about an Arizona tribe along the southern border that has filed a lawsuit in federal court against the Department of Homeland Security. Stay tuned for that story. Later today, we'll be talking sports. Minnesota Lynx, they've had a couple of fantastic games. They did lose one in the midst there, but they won against the LA Sparks, and that was such an amazing game. Olivia Miles just breaking records.
It seems like, from what I see, you know, popping up on social media, popping up on random, you know, areas of the internet, is that the hype for Olivia Miles is growing and growing. And I haven't even heard one mention, who got drafted first?
AZ Fudd did.
Okay. It almost feels like you haven't seen the name anywhere.
I know.
I keep thinking about that.
Of course, they ask her that in the post game questions to Olivia, and she's just the most gracious person. Yeah. AZ's done well-ish, you know, It has been a surprise, you know. I think that Miles was the third draft.
Olivia Miles was? I thought it was number two.
Okay. I did too, and then I saw something and said it was the third, but...
We have the internet here, but yeah, the sports page. Of course, we got Football is Life coming up as well. Looking forward to that. As of last night, we are into the second round of games in the group stage. So everybody's played once so far. A few teams have played twice. So for sure, a lot to talk about on that avenue. And it seems like the focus has been a little more on the games themselves over the last little bit. So we'll see what we get to. But where did this Olivia Miles thing go?
We'll look at it.
We'll find it out for later. Yeah. We got, you know.
Yeah, she's been scoring 28, 29, and 31 points in a game. I mean, come on, you should watch a Lynx game. It's a lot of fun. Coming up, we'll have our talkback segment as well. Malachi's going to help us know what's happening in terms of live music in the state of Minnesota. And thanks for being with us on this Friday morning.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas. An Arizona tribe along the southern border has filed a lawsuit in federal court against the Department of Homeland Security. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrasio has details.
The Thonaoffam Nation has submitted an injunction to halt the Trump administration from looking to build a wall along its 62-mile boundary with Mexico. According to the complaint, the administration plans to solicit contracts for construction on sovereign lands without the tribe's consent.
We would prefer not to file this lawsuit and instead use these resources for our people.
That's Thonaoffam Chairman Verlin Jose in a social media message. Here's Vice Chairwoman Carla Johnson.
The wall is a wasteful political gimmick. It will separate our families, desecrate our sacred sites and waters, and harm our natural environment.
In response to the legal filings, the Department of Homeland Security cites Mullen's Cherokee citizenship and commitment to tribal sovereignty, telling KJZZ the agency values its relationship with the Thonaoffam Nation and remains focused on open communication and minimizing impacts. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrasio.
Last weekend, a Navajo Nation community near Page voted to oppose a controversial copper mine proposal. KNAW's Chris Clements reports.
The copper mine chapter voted 45-12 to adopt a resolution opposing Essential Minerals' exploration of a possible copper mine. The resolution also rescinded a policy put forward by the chapter back in 2005 that supported exploration of a separate copper mine. The resolution adopted on Sunday says back in 2005, the company looking into mining failed to fulfill its commitments. It adds that no mining company, like Essential Minerals, can use the 2005 policy to justify exploring a copper mine now. Tribal members say they're worried a copper mine would cause health and environmental issues in the community. Representatives of Essential Minerals previously told KNAU they want to build trust about the project, which they say is just being explored right now. For National Native News, I'm Chris Clements in Flagstaff.
The day after the season's first drift gill net fishing opener, salmon remained top of mind for fishers of the Kuskokwim River. At Riverview Park in Bethel, community members gathered and filled plates of dried whitefish and grilled fresh-caught fillets of king salmon. The second annual Return of the Salmon event was put on by Mother Kuskokwim Tribal Coalition, a grassroots organization opposing the proposed Donlin gold mine. Supporters of the mine point to the job prospects it would bring to locals in the region. Callista Corporation, the regional native corporation who owns the subsurface rights to the proposed mine site, says that responsible development and subsistence can coexist. Others, like Mother Kuskokwim, say it's too risky. They argue that potential contamination from the mine could pose dire environmental impacts, namely for the region's salmon populations. Organizer Gloria Simeon says on the Kuskokwim, salmon is a mechanism for something bigger.
Fish camp is not an activity. Fish camp is the single most important time of families coming together with one purpose, and that's to get prepared for the winter.
She says the moments on display in a community event like this, children playing, babies having their first bites of fresh salmon of the season, that's what the Mother Kuskokwim advocates are trying to protect. This story was provided by KYUK Samantha Watson. I'm Jill Freitas.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding in part by the Annenberg Foundation and the Ford Foundation. Thanks so much for tuning in on this Friday morning on this Juneteenth. As Malachi said, if you have an event going on in your region, please let us know about it, whether it's Juneteenth or some community events. We're getting ready for big 4th of July and things are whipping up in northern Minnesota. So many community celebrations and all kinds of things happening.
Yeah, even looking for Juneteenth events. Seeing there's, you know, the Leech Lake Days contest powwows this weekend. There's some solstice celebration Sunday's the solstice. Arts and Crafts Festival in Virginia. So lots going on around the area. We always appreciate getting tips on those things from you. It helps us stay tuned. We are all, you know, we spend a lot of time searching for things, Heidi, and poking around Facebook, community event calendars, whatever it can, but we know things do slip by. So when you share those with us, it helps us to get them out and get us more connected to kind of the obscurities and the creativity and the community and just the greatness of living in a place like this. So 218-326-1234 is a line. You can send those. You can email them to PSA as well at kexe.org. We'll be going over some things that we have heard from listeners in just a little bit here.
Yeah, we do want to thank, we got a couple of people who have donated in the last 24 hours. We want to thank Jeff from Faustin, who became a member, as well as Matt from Albuquerque. You can do that anytime if this is a great time for you to do it. You don't have to wait for our membership drives. This is how we do it. It's people supporting this sort of broadcast, this digital presence where you get local news, you get great information about the new music that is out there. You basically look cool to your friends. If you read Fresh Picks and listen to a couple of things every week, I mean, you're going to have more friends. I can guarantee that.
Yeah, you're going to have a good music taste, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a collection of songs and albums that we actually had lots of people pitching in this week. Andrew DeZingle, Jennifer Barr with our pick of 76, Megan Buffington, all contributing some of their passions. Folks beyond the music team who everyone loves music here at KAXE. And so it's a nice little roundup of things that you can find there at KAXE.org. Now, Heidi, circling back to what you just said about one of our new members, do you think without looking at it, can you now spell Albuquerque?
Yeah, I was saying that to Malachi, like even me copying it. I think so. I think it's one though that would be hard to do the out loud.
Yeah.
Writing it, I could figure it out.
You can figure it out.
So many cues.
More cues than we thought.
Yeah.
That was a nice way
and
to start the morning.
And therefore you, you know? So, I mean, it's just.
True, truly, yes. Yeah, right off the bat, there's a U where you wouldn't you wouldn't expect, so.
Right, if you're a word game person, you know that QI is a word and QAT, but other than that, you need the U for almost everything.
You know, I wonder where the word Albuquerque comes from. Do you ever think about things like this? Is it Spanish? It almost doesn't feel. Oh, I bet it almost is. Doesn't yeah. feel Spanish to me. Maybe it's just the way we say it.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Someone out there can help us out with the word Albuquerque.
It does. I don't even know if I could spell it, even though I have it written down in front of me. It's a tough one. So
great Neil Young song too. Very sad.
Oh.
About Albuquerque.
Okay. I don't know that one.
He's like 40 miles away from Albuquerque. He's, you know, he's down and out on the highway and he's just, and then he just says the name Albuquerque and he sings it and it's like, oh, yeah, I hope he gets there. One of those kind of songs.
Sure.
Yep.
Wow. It is time for our talkback segment of the Friday morning show. It's where we read your texts or listen to calls or messages you leave us on SpeakPipe. You can also email us comments at kaxe.org.
Aaron from Grand Rapids emailed Saturday night, so fun to hear all those banging beats on Ben Frankenstein's drum and bass After Dark show. I was listening to Green Cheese and heard there was going to be a drum and bass show afterward, and I was like, no way. Who plays that around here? My wife and I used to play this style of music after 10 p.m. on KAXE in the early 2000s. So fun to hear it back on the airwaves. Bring it, Ben.
Yeah, Aaron, you and Teresa should come back.
Yes, there we go.
That would be great.
After Dark is back. That's right. Yeah, we had, and more comments too about After Dark.
We also heard from Rosemary in Meadowlands. She said, thank you, DJ Ben Frankenstein, on app for After Dark. You're making my late night while finishing up moving. I feel like a ketamine infusion, except for my low back and joints.
Well, hope the move went well, Rosemary, yeah. If you are listening. I like that, you know, I like that. I think DJ names are having a comeback amongst our volunteer staff. And I like it. Did you ever have one at any point?
No, I did not. Never. I did not. My name sort of lends. I think your name is like this too. It sort of almost sounds like DJ names. Ours.
Yeah. I was, when I first started, I was DJ Malarkey.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Middle of the night, Malarkey.
Oh, that's good. No.
Then I was just Malachi for a long time.
Okay.
I was like, I'm the only one.
Sure.
Now I started using my last name. I was like, I can't just own this name. There are other Malachis out there, but
Annie Humphrey took a name last night.
Oh, on this topic. I didn't hear.
Yeah, but I don't remember what it was. I was just listening in and out. She had a great show last night. We did hear from some folks via text that were listening. Andy from Brainerd had texted and saying, Annie, Thursday night is fantastic. You go, woman. KXE rules in this 67-year-old's mind.
Yeah. I really enjoyed having Annie on the morning show yesterday. And you were like, yeah, you'll be back later. And she was like, oh, yeah, I'm hosting tonight.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that nice comment, Andy. What else do we have here?
Oh, tomorrow night after dark, Jay Steelwolf will be featuring heavy metal from 9 to midnight.
So. There we go. Yeah, always something fun on After Dark. Lisa from Balsam shared her thoughts on our album of the week, which is Isle of Hope by Dwayne Betts. So I have to admit, I'm not loving the new Dwayne Betts album, probably because it's melancholy. However, I did see him live a couple of years ago, and his show was great. They even played a few Allman Brothers tunes in tribute. Of course, Dwayne Betts. Betts is the son of Dickie Betts, one of the founding members of Allman Brothers Band. Thanks for sharing, Lisa. It is it's inspired by his father's passing, so I can see how, you know, if you're not in a place looking for that sort of melancholy, emotional trip, then it might not resonate. We look for all comments, whether you're loving the album or it's maybe not quite hitting the same way you expected. We appreciate it all.
We need to know. Yesterday was like Andrew jumped on with DJ Ding for Headwaters, and you know it's going to be good. So he's talking about the top 10 of Rolling Stone magazine's 100 best punk album list. You were listening to this conversation.
I tuned in. I didn't even know it existed until I heard them talking about it, but my ears did perk up.
Okay.
I knew that, you know, I could tell that maybe Andrew was trying to get Dan to say something ridiculous about something, but.
Yeah. So one of our volunteer hosts, Heather Kidd, texted. She said, guys, seriously, for the one female band in the top 10, you basically shrug and say nothing. Plus, where is Patti Smith, the godmother? But I love your passionate debate.
I agree that Patti Smith should have been in there. They had other people who were like founders of punk.
Yeah.
And so once you go there, then I think you got to have Patti Smith. But yeah, no, it is a good, it is something important to think about, especially in punk, which was a very male genre, as so many areas of music are. But punk was, in many ways, for its rebellious nature, it was very white and very male, almost more so than other ones. So it's always good to be reminded to, yeah, I wonder why, you know, thoughts on certain bands might be the way they are. Mm-hmm. X-Ray Specs was also in there, and Polystyrene, incredible female vocalist from a UK band as well, which they chatted about. So we appreciate those kind of conversations and like good reminders to be thinking about your own biases and thinking about your own experiences and the way we consume music and how those lists are done. But
we got a donation from Jeff from Foston yesterday. He said, thanks for playing Tommy Bolin. You made my day. And that was during our On the River program yesterday with, who was hosting yesterday afternoon?
Dave the Wave.
Oh, Dave the Wave. Yeah. Nice job. That was okay. Great.
So Jeff, I talked to Jeff. He was thrilled. I talked to him on the phone.
Oh, nice.
He was like, can you let Dave know that he's playing Tommy Bolin? I love it. And he had said that he was from Langby.
Oh.
Do you think it's one of those situations where you have a Foston address if you are in Langby?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
Yeah. I did talk to him. He said, yeah. So I just want to shout that out there.
Right. Gotcha. You got confused there because you're like, is there a Jeff from Foston?
Well, I know they're in the same area, but anyways, Langby.
And of course, we got a lot of comments in the last week or so because our question of the week had to do with ice cream and your favorite kind of ice cream or your ice cream treats. I know we all last week when there was one incredibly hot day and we got treated to Dilly Bars by, oh no, you were gone.
I got on the next day.
Yeah, okay.
Kari and I had breakfast Dilly Bars.
That's right. But you had walked out because it was so hot. In a huff, both of you. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
When you say walk out, you know what? Okay, I'll own it. I did walk out. I went.
I don't blame you.
I went and worked somewhere else yeah. Where there was a little more airflow.
Well, it was.
After I arrived at my new location to work, a message was posted that said there's Dilly Bars in the break room. Yeah. And I was thinking, yeah, I should have just, this is one of the life's lessons.
Yeah, you should have stuck it out.
Hit you when you're down, you know?
No, you got
stick it.
It
out.
You got it the next day. And it was one of those that, it was making it worse. It happened to be a day where everybody was in the office, and that was making it even hotter. So you were just taking one for the team by walking out.
Thank you. Thank you for helping me out. But, you know, Dilly Bars in the morning, I'd recommend it. Give it a try.
Yeah.
You know? Anyways, back to the ice cream.
Yes.
People have a lot of thoughts on ice cream. I feel like we've also been getting some tips on, like, this is a good place to get a good scoop of ice cream around the area as well.
Right.
We haven't even talked yet. I'm a Moose Tracks guy.
Oh, wow, Malachi.
You know?
I'm just kind of a very simple on ice cream. I used to like a lot of different sorts of things, and now over time I like a coffee ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even need like stuff in it. I used to love Blizzards. I would never order a Blizzard now. I don't like all the stuff in it. I just want a cone.
You just want a cone?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or Dilly Bar. Dilly Bar's good, but I don't know.
So a chocolate shell. That counts, but Blizzards feel different, but I was thinking of the, you know, the fancier types of ice cream flavors that you can get in like every grocery store across America.
Mm-hmm.
So let's limit it to that sort of selection. Then I was going with Moose Tracks.
Yeah. No, it's a good ice cream. It's a solid choice. I wouldn't, if I was at someone's house and they offered it to me, I wouldn't be like, no, I don't eat that.
You go digging for the peanut butter cups or do you just scoop and let them come as they may?
I think I just let them come as they may.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
It's like eating trail mix and you pick out M&Ms. It's a no-no. No.
Especially if there's raisins in there too, it's a problem. Anyway, I don't like raisins. We'd love to hear from you. I don't know if there's any raisins in any ice cream. I remember as a kid going to Baskin Robbins when I was visiting relatives in the Twin Cities. So everything felt special, of course, and getting bubblegum ice cream.
That doesn't really
do it. Such a kid thing.
That doesn't really do it for me.
The textures don't work because the gum doesn't really stay. You know, you get to chew gum after you eat the ice cream for like 2 seconds. It disintegrates.
Wait, it's not just flavored like bubblegum? There's bubblegum in it? What the?
Yeah.
When was this?
Well, you know, 70s, 80s, you know.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Every little girl at that time had to order it because it was pink.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, that's, you know, I liked.
And definitely
when
wasn't
when I was a kid, I feel like I would go for like the bright blue ice creams. I forget what they're called. But now looking back, I just think, what the heck was wrong with me? But, I mean, we even heard, so people made some We've got some claims here that I feel like I need to confirm.
Okay.
Because Susan says that a twist cone from the 32 degree freeze in Virginia is a best in state.
Whoa.
That's a big claim right there.
Yeah.
What, like, is it the shape of a twist cone that makes it the best, like when it's perfectly uniform, or just the flavor of the ice cream? I'm wondering.
Yeah, I don't know. And then she also talked about a new scoop shop, Northwoods Snackle Shop, on Highway 53 next to Northwoods Bates. They scoop up
Cedar Crest.
And have soft serve and have a Facebook page. What's Cedar Crest?
I think that's one of like the main, you know, you could have Blue Bunny in those tubs. You could have.
Oh, okay.
I believe.
All right.
But don't quote me on that. I like that Susan, after sending that, just said, I want to be clear. I'm not affiliated with them. I'm just excited for more ice cream. I feel that.
And I think it is such a fun thing when you find a little independent ice cream store somewhere, you know, or if you have one in your community. That's what we want you to text in and tell us about your favorite. You can text 218-326-1234. We just heard from Emily in Des Moines. I have fond memories of getting bubblegum ice cream at Baskin Robbins with my dad as a kid. Thank you so much for the memory. But Emily, here's the thing. You couldn't really make bubbles. You know, bubblegum is supposed to not just be like, just
was it that it was too cold, or was it like too dry after you got it out of there?
The texture was just wrong with the whole thing going on.
So you had to eat.
It was tiny little flecks of it, almost like Dino Chiclets.
Oh, yeah. So you'd have to eat like a ton of ice cream and collect it into a little ball before you could blow a bubble.
And then it would disintegrate by that time. So
I love to get ice cream in Floodwood at the gas station.
Oh, gas station ice cream's pretty good.
Because they actually have scoop there.
Yeah.
It seems like every once in a while the machine's broken, but...
And they're generous.
No free ads. Yes, but they do give you a heaping portion.
They are very generous. Bill from Afton Home for Wayward Youth is saying yes, just yes. Double chocolate fudge moose track with a spoon straight from the carton.
From the carton. There we go. Now we're talking. You know, growing up, I didn't realize how lucky I was that our DQ stayed open all year long.
Oh, you were lucky.
Isn't that weird? I feel like for Minnesotans, that's not a guarantee. Does it get that much colder here, or is it that there's so much more seasonal stuff? Because we would go in the winter sometimes.
Wow. I don't even know what to say to you.
Doesn't seem that weird to me.
What I feel bad about is young Malachi, or Malarkey, did not get the experience of waiting for it to open.
I know. This is why I have...
I mean, it's really cool.
This is why
Dairy Queen's open. We can go to Dairy Queen.
And do you find that overall in life you are a more patient person? Because I'm not. And it might all come back to having access to DQ all year long.
I don't know. This is big. Maybe. I don't know how patient I am, though. I don't know about that. But we'd love to hear from you this morning. You can text us 218-326-1234. We're celebrating Juneteenth. Malachi's chosen some music for us right now.
Yeah, we're going to hear a little Mavis Staples and Levon Helm.